Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Carolina Mountford. Carolina is a mental health speaker and writer and has experience of an eating disorder, trauma and other mental health conditions. I find Carolina incredibly inspiring, and our conversation starts by talking about quasi-recovery, which is something I am potentially experiencing at the moment, and how Carolina stepped away from that into the freedom of life without an eating disorder. We then go on to talk about the role of faith and religion in Carolina's recovery, and we also speak about Lent and how you can use this to benefit your recovery and not use it as a way to avoid certain foods that may be fearing you.
Hello Carolina, how are you doing?
Hi Han, I'm good, and it's lovely to chat to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. I was actually thinking, because I actually remember having a chat with you before we did our last podcast, because I remember I went for a walk, but I can't remember when we recorded it.
It was a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
I know. Time flies.
But so lovely that we're still in contact.
Yes.
And having this chat. So I guess before we go into what we were going to talk about today, do you want to just introduce yourself to the listeners if they haven't heard of you before?
Sure. So I'm Carolina Mountford. I'm a mental health speaker and do a bit of writing. I give talks and workshops in schools, colleges, medical schools, businesses, whoever basically wants to understand more about eating disorders, what they are, and the journey sort of to recovery and freedom. And that's what I'm really passionate about. And yes, I had a history of sort of trauma and eating disorders for 15 years, and I've been free for, I've lost count, it's over 20 years
Amazing.
Or thereabout. So yeah, and here I am. It's
here you are.
Yeah.
And without sounding cheesy, like, you genuinely are somebody that inspires me so much. And if I have like a thing of, oh no, recovery is not possible, like, you know, you have to live with this, like even a small element or whatever, I'm like, you are testament that that is not true. And I remember, oh my god, I remember the last episode we did, and just I listened back to it and I was like, oh my god, I'm so inspired. And yeah, it's just, your story is incredible.
I'm so pleased it's been helpful. That's lovely.
Yeah, it really has. And so I can imagine all the work that you're doing now, doing all of your talks, you're inspiring a lot of other people as well. So it's brilliant that that's now what your focus is.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's great. And I love it. I love doing it. I love speaking to people. But what excites me the most is when I see other people grasp that hope, mm-hmm. and when they're able to hold on to and believe it for themselves, mm-hmm. that is so exciting. And that's the bit that I really love. And obviously there's a period of time where, you know, someone may not necessarily believe that it's possible for them. And in that time, you know, we hold the hope for them, but there always comes a point where they're ready, when they're kind of, they're close enough to, and they're like, okay, maybe I can.
Yeah.
And that's so exciting, and I love that.
Yeah. And I feel like that's such a hard time often to go through, because you I think that's definitely what the past kind of 6 months or so have been for me, in that it's been like like at the depth of despair and then kind of needing to do something about it, seeing other people, they've recovered, that's great, but there's no way I'll ever do that. And then it's so interesting how once you do start to recover, it's so difficult, but you start to see those glimmers of hope and you start to realize like, oh my God, like this actually could be something that's possible to me. Or like, I think you start to uncover things. This is my experience anyway, of like, I didn't expect that this is, what am I trying to say? I didn't realize that I was missing out on these particular things. So that's why recovery maybe wasn't that attractive. But also I never thought that these things would be accessible to me. Mm-hmm. But then you start to have little like tastes of, that's the bad pun to use, but you start to get like a little taste of, you know, being more engaged or being able to see more friends or just, you know, having more energy to do things. And you're like, oh, so like if I keep doing this, then I can keep having this happiness. And actually this is so much better than where I've been before.
Yeah, it's those glimmers in the darkness, and it, you know, living with an eating disorder can be really, really dark, as a lot of us know. But you know, as you said, you know, the more you do the work, and then you get that, you know, that first glimmer, and you think, oh, what was that? And you think, oh, maybe that can happen again. It might not, but the more those. The more you see those glimmers in the darkness, then the better able we are, A, to hold on to them and to believe that there will be more of those moments, and ultimately that those glimmers become so big that they they sort of overpower the darkness, and you get more glimmers and less dark, which is the opposite from where we all started, which is kind of a place which is full of dark with no glimmers. Yeah, there's definitely that point where, you know, as you said yourself, you know, you always didn't realize what you were missing out on until you had that glimmer of, oh, this is what I've been missing. And and it's a little bit like, you know, when you've been through something really difficult, or even if it's a trauma, you know, we often just kind of muddle through and we get through and we do what we need to do to get through that day and that season. And it's very often only once we're through it that we look back and we think, oh, wow, that was really hard. How did I do that? And I suppose the flip side of that is, you know, we don't really fully appreciate the stuff that we're missing out on until we begin to experience them again. And then kind of our bodies and our minds and our brains remember, oh yeah, this was what life was like before I was unwell, and this is how life can be again. And I think those moments are, you know, if we allow ourselves to really reflect on them, are the things that can sort of propel us forward for increasing change. And I think you're right, you mentioned earlier, it's quite hard, you know, as you get closer, because it's very easy to get stuck in a place of kind of relative wellness, and it's that sort of mid quasi recovery, and I know we've chatted about this before, about, you know, just sort of, you know, we keep doing the work and we just keep pushing through the next thing that we see, and you know, the next rock to climb over, the next obstacle to get through, and the more we do that, then again, just the further away we keep stepping from our eating disorders.
But it's hard, that stage, isn't
it's
it?
Because really, I think hard.
You go, you know, what you were saying there about you sort of don't really realize what you're missing out on. I think part of that is because you are literally, your brain and your body is doing everything to survive, and your world is so small because all you kind of have the capacity to focus on, or all the eating disorder wants you to focus on, is the eating disorder. And so for me, that didn't feel like something. I got to a point where I thought, I can't sustain this anymore, like this needs to change. But that sort of point when you reach the quasi recovery, like that is something you can live your life in that space. And I think that that for me is why this stage, and I've got to this stage so many times before in terms of like, you know, recovery is going well, but it's, there's still a lot of behaviors that I'm holding on to. And it's like how you then keep pushing yourself to that, to that next level, because ultimately this is a life that you could continue to live forever. You question whether, you know, do you want to be kind of tied up in all of these behaviors or not? But I mean, I don't know whether that was your experience, but this for me is almost the hardest and the scariest bit, because it's completely like, it could be the place where I completely let go of eating disorder, whereas at the moment it's a bit like, well, there's a bit of safety here because I've got a few of those behaviors still in my back pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, those, I call them, you know, sort of, you know, residual behaviors, you know, they can act as a bit of a comfort blanket, as a bit of a, you know, safety net. They're familiar. We've, most of us who've had eating disorders have had them for a long time, and so, you know, we know them really well, and you know, for a certain period of time they have served a purpose, not a brilliant purpose, but they have served a purpose. And so letting go of those last ones can be really scary, but also I think, yeah, just, you know, that space of, like you said, you know, do I really want to let go of this? Do I really want to? And to that extent, once you're at that place, you know, because presumably for someone to get to that place, they have had some professional input, some support, some therapy, some treatment to get them from really unwell to a bit less unwell or a bit better, you know, where, you know, and there comes a point where you will only get as well as you are prepared to do the work. Does that make sense? You're only going to get out of it what you put into it, I suppose. Would be the sort of, you know, academic analogy, which, you know, you hear parents and schools tell children, you don't read, you're not going to get very far, or you know, but and I think to a degree there is truth in that, because, you know, we can get to this place, you know, where we are functioning, we are you know, holding down a job, we are studying, we have our families or whatever it is, but we also have all these other behaviors. And I think then all recovery is, you know, recovery is a choice, because no one can do it for us. We have to choose to recover. But in that place that we're talking about, you know, we have to choose, you know, each time to break down the next one. And really, it's kind of, a part of it is, you know, how much headspace, how much energy, how much time do we still want to devote or give to our day, you know, to our eating disorders, or to our, you know, our disordered eating habits, as they might have, you know, lessened in intensity and severity. And I think for me, one of the things that I am so joyful for and grateful for is the freedom of that headspace. Of, you know, it's not that I don't have any of those thoughts. I am human. I am not a machine. Those thoughts come. But the freedom of, you know, putting on a pair of jeans, you know, after Christmas or after, you know, whatever, and I'm like, oh, yeah, they're a bit more snug than they were before Christmas. Okay. And the thought flies out my head just as quickly as it flew in my head. And I think that's the freedom that is so liberating. Whereas, you know, years before, or even in that quasi-recovery mode, that could have looked like, oh, my jeans are a bit tighter than they were before Christmas. Need to do something about that. Everything's fine. I can still go out with my friends, and I can still, you know, do all the things. But it's just those little things that, you know, those thoughts, those which then can sometimes translate into behaviors of, you know, are going to compensate. And it's very nuanced, because at this stage it's not as severe, it's not as you know, black and white or all or nothing as it was in the earlier stages of illness. It's much more nuanced, it's much more subtle, and I think therefore we need to be we need to wisen up to it and just be really alert. And and ultimately be really honest with ourselves. At the end of the day, this is just us and us, really. It's our illness. And we have an army of people, hopefully, around, even it could be a little small army, but an army of real warriors who are with us and by our sides. But ultimately, they can't do it for us, much as we really want them to. I'm slightly probably digressing and rambling.
But, no.
It's kind of making that decision of what am I going to do with this thought? Am I going to, you know, let it dictate my day? Am I going to let it dictate, you know, what I eat, what I do, how much I move, who I see, what I wear? Or am I just going to say, yeah, okay, these jeans don't feel like they did 3 weeks ago. Well, so what? It's really not the end of the world, and it's fine, and I can still eat whatever I want, and I don't have to go to the gym today, and I don't have to do anything today if I don't want to. I can stay in my pajamas and, you know, eat bagels all day or whatever it is. For different people, it'll be different things. But I think that, and to be able to think that and feel that, you know, without feeling guilty, without is just amazing. But also, like you said, is being in that, you know, social situations with people and being fully present. That is just magical. Because with eating disorders, where we have previously been so withdrawn and isolated, because that's what eating disorders love us, you know, doing, is hiding in darkness in our bedrooms and not seeing anyone and not socializing and interacting. And to be able to be with other people and focus on the communication, the emotions, the encounters that we have with others, the joy, the celebrations, without half our brain or most of our brain going, what am I eating? What do I look like? What am I wearing? My jeans are uncomfortable. What are they thinking? And missing out, as you know, on you know, we're there, but we're not really there. It's just joyful beyond words I think, as you've said, you know, you're getting more and more of those glimmers of those moments of, you know, being fully present and how amazing that is.
I think it's really interesting because when you said a minute ago about, like, you know, how much time realistically the thought is, you know, in this stage of quasi recovery, how much time do you now want to give to the eating disorder? And you could say that, you could take that as a perspective of, oh well, I've been in recovery for ages, you know, I've worked really hard and I just don't want to be doing that anymore. I don't want my focus to be recovery. I just want to lead a normal life and move on, which I totally get. But I think in itself is like, okay, well, like, if you just devote a little bit more time to pushing to, you know, that next level, then you won't have the sort of consuming thoughts that potentially are still there. And it was actually this sounds so silly to say, because, you know, this weekend I've been with my best friends and my family, like, I should have known this, but my body has changed, and not a single person commented on the fact that my body had changed. Not a single person, you know, I said to my partner, I was like, it was so crazy because I thought that people would be like, oh honey, you look different or whatever, and he was like, I doubt anybody even noticed. And the only thing that they would have noticed was the fact that, you know, you were able to have conversations with them, you were able to spend the whole day with people without being like, I just need to go and have 5 minutes because I'm feeling super overwhelmed right now or whatever. And I think you just can't experience that when you're, you know, in the depth of an eating disorder. And I think that's what makes it so difficult. It's like, you can't, like, you know, you can't do something and then be like, oh, this is what recovery feels like, so now I've got that inspiration. You have to do the hard work to then realize what, like, those good feelings are, and then that motivates you and propels you forwards. But it's so hard when, you know, you're trapped and you just think, well, I can't get out, and I actually don't really, like, this is all I know, and actually this feels really safe and comfortable, so why would I want to leave this? But then when you do get out, you're like, well, that was really uncomfortable. That was literally not safe at all.
I had a thought tonight, it's gone. I'm such a that make me a terrible interviewee. You were saying about, you know, when you're in this point of recovery and then, like, you know, oh, I've done it for so many years, I kind of don't want to keep doing it, and there is, you know, it's okay to rest. You know, recovery is incredibly hard. It is exhausting because so much of our world, sadly, revolves around, you know, food and whatever. And so it's obviously taking up a lot of our time, a lot of our energy, a lot of our headspace. You know, it is just really hard, and it's emotionally difficult. You know, sitting with and processing all the emotions, and you know what's behind it, and how am I responding to it? And identifying it in itself can be incredibly difficult, and then you know, working your way through that whole thing. And so it's completely natural and understandable to kind of think, okay, I'm really tired of doing this. And that's when, you know, it's okay to hit the pause button. It's okay to, if we go back to my mountain analogy that I shared with you in my last episode, you know, it's okay to, you know, sit on the mountain plan and kind of go, okay, I'm just going to pause. Mm-hmm. But then get up again and keep going. And I think that's where we can, you know, risk getting stuck in this quasi-recovery mode is we just sit down on the mountainside and we go, okay, this is as far as I'm going. And you know, for some people, for any number of reasons, that will be as far as they go. And there's no shame and there's no blame and there's no guilt in that at all. There's zero condemnation in that if that's as far as someone gets. And, you know, we don't know, you know, what they are facing that is stopping them from going any further. And so, you know, huge amounts of compassion there. But in as much as it depends on us and our desire and our will and our discipline to a point, because there are times when you think, no, I've got to do this, and yes, it's hard and yes, it's boring, but come on, let's do it. I think then, so long as, you know, we get back up and we keep plodding up that mountain, you know, we will just, you know, get more and more of those amazing glimmer moments and those freedom moments, which are amazing.
Yeah, which really are very special. Yeah,
they are.
Yeah, no, I think you're so right, but it's so nice to hear somebody that has kind of, you know, been there and gets it and understands the difficulty of, you know, keeping on, as they say. But I guess the thing that we said that we were going to speak about today was your relationship with your religion and your faith. And so I'd be really interested to hear the role, if any, that Christianity played in your recovery, and how that impacted you when you were in recovery.
So, I mean, in short, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my faith. It is something that I clung on to for dear life. I wouldn't say I ever lost my faith completely, but there was certainly a long period of time where I wasn't very active in my faith. It wasn't a very big part of my life, you know, for that period of time. But it was something that I knew to be true, and I knew that it was something for me to hold on to, that it was, you know, that God was a rock that I could, you know, stand on. And so in that sense, I always knew that it was there and that it was true and that it was, and so that really helped me. And, you know, I say this, you know, and that time, you know, I was desperate. I was literally clinging on by a thread, thinking, you know, God, you know, if I know you're there, but it really doesn't feel like it. And, you know, it was, you know, desperate cries to God, kind of going, you know, please help. And I think it helped it gave me a hope that one day somehow things would change. And also, I knew that I wasn't alone. I knew that he was in it with me, alongside me, that I wasn't abandoned, that I wasn't forgotten, that I wasn't, which were so many of the things that I had felt from my kind of, you know, earthly family, unloved, unworthy, forgotten, abandoned, not wanted, not, you know, unloved, all those things. And I knew that was not true of God, and that he was with me through it all. And so that was a huge source of strength and comfort. And then, you know, as the years kind of went on, my faith kind of grew stronger, and my understanding of it became a bit deeper, and it became a much bigger, active, prominent part of my life. But it's kind of always been there. And I think without my faith, I really would have given up many, many, many years ago, and I actually wouldn't be here. I tried to take my own life a couple of times, and I have no doubt that God intervened, particularly with one of them. I was going to, crash my car into a brick wall, and my car wouldn't start. My car was fine. There were no problems with my car. I was in my car. I was, sobbing. I was despairing. I saw no way out of the situation I was in, and nothing was ever going to get better. And this, life was pointless. And all of those things that many people will resonate with, I'm sure. That sense of deep, deep hopelessness. And I had parked literally in front of a big brick wall, and I was going to reverse my car and go at it at high speed, and my car would not start. And I literally just had to sit there, and I was screaming at God, and I just sat there. And it wasn't until I had fully calmed down, and I just, it was about 20, 25 minutes later. And, the intensity of that emotion, of that despair, of that hopelessness, kind of ebbed a little. And I kind of was able to breathe a bit more normally. And I kind of, it was almost like he just kind of reset me a little. And I tried again, and it turned on. And I calmly drove home. And I, and I look back at, that was a really kind of pivotal moment for me. And that was at a time where, I had no prayer life. I wasn't reading my Bible. I wasn't going to church. I wasn't, I was really far away from God, a bit like, the prodigal son. And I was not living a life that, Christians are called to live. And yet he still kind of, I felt, kind of had his hand in me. I kind of went, no, you're not going to do that. I've got better plans for you than that. And I've always kind of, I've never forgotten that. And I think, that, obviously had an impact. And things are now very different, thankfully.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. And I really appreciate you sharing that experience that you've had, because I think it's, that was really moving to hear. And, it does sound very much like there were higher powers involved making sure that things didn't happen to you. I guess what I'm really interested in, so obviously you have like that experience and, God intervenes, and you don't then end up, you don't end up crashing the car. And that's obviously a fantastic experience, and he saved you. My question would be, how was your relationship affected when you were struggling with your eating disorder? Because, if we're going to say that God intervened with the car crashing, you could equally say that, God not necessarily made you have an eating disorder, but, didn't kind of pick you up and make everything better and put you in situations that then, meant down the line you were vulnerable to an eating disorder. So did you have resentment there, or?
For a long time I did. Totally I did. And I was like, why? Yeah, I had lots of questions. I had lots of whys. I had lots of you know, why aren't you helping me? Why have you let this happen? Where are you? You know, I had all the questions that people have about suffering. I mean, on a slightly different scale, we're not talking, you know, I mean, my life in comparison to world wars and famines and, you know, is really quite on a very different scale. But still, I'm like, you know, why suffering? Why have you let this happen? Why, you know, you can do anything. Please make this go away. Please help me not be sick tomorrow. Please help me not to take laxative tonight, you know. And I suppose part of the answer to that is, I don't know. And actually, you know, the Bible does tell us that, you know, we won't know all the answers. No one will, you know, this side of heaven. So there is an element of actually, and that's part of kind of faith, right? It's being certain of what we don't know and unsure of what we don't see. So it took me a long time to kind of be okay with that. And I think what kind of older, wiser people around me said was, I test everything that anyone tells me about Christianity on the Bible. If it's in the Bible, I'll go with it. If it sounds a bit, that's, you know, I'll check it out. And what everyone said is that he is with us in it all. And I think, I suppose my clearest answer would be that God doesn't cause bad things to happen, but he does allow things to happen. Why? We don't know. Sometimes we might get answer to that. A lot of the time we don't. And part of the difficulty is trusting, and I think, you know, for Christians is trusting and knowing that there is a reason. We might not know it, but he does. And if we believe in the nature of God as it is shown to us in the Bible and in the gospel, then we know that it will only be ultimately for good. And I know that sits very uncomfortably with some people, and it's a hard concept to grasp. You kind of think, well, it is, and I'm no theologian. I really don't have all the answers, but I suppose my faith, I would describe my faith as, and I don't mean this in a very simplistic way, but you know, I'm not a theologian. I'm not an intellectual. I'm not, you know, a cerebral, and so I don't have a lot of the answers that others may have. You know, you ask some theologians to come on your podcast and they will be able to give you much better academic answers. My response is much more of a heart response to what I've read in the Bible, to what I've experienced and to what I've heard. It's more of a, yeah, and I think, yeah, and I'm okay with that. A lot of people, or some people, you know, perhaps more kind of scientists or people, you know, they want answers. They want, you know, if this, then how, you know, how does this work? Why does it work? And I totally get that. And I kind of wish I had a brain that could understand, you know, much more of the kind of, yeah, the kind of theological, intellectual aspect of it all, but I don't, and so I know that my faith and my relationship with God and Jesus isn't dependent on my intellectual cerebral understanding, that it you know, and I think it is hard not having the answers, and you know, but I think that's true in so many aspects of life. You know, I'm free. I'm well. You know, life is in many ways amazing and wonderful. You know, we still have our challenges. We, you know, and I think, oh Lord, really? Have I, you know, okay. And this was just a few months ago. I'm like, okay, I kind of think I've had enough trauma and difficulty and battles and struggles and what, you know, to last me beyond eternity. Like, can I just have a break now? But also the, you know, Jesus said, and it's in the Bible, you know, take heart, you know, in this world, you will have trouble. As Christians, we are not immune from the difficulties and the challenges that anyone else faces. We suffer from mental illnesses, we get cancer, Christians get, you know, in that sense, everything is the same. But Jesus did say, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And so we know that he knows that we're having a hard time. That makes sense. And I think also knowing that, you know, for a long time I used to think, God, you know, am I a really bad Christian? Am I not praying enough? Am I not believing enough? Is my faith not big enough? Is this why? Is it just that I need to pray more? And I think that the church has had a role in that. I'll be kind, perhaps inadvertently kind of given out the message, and I think it's much better now, but I think, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, I know a lot of people kind of felt blamed for their distress and their difficulties and their mental illness, that it was a lack of faith or that it was sin, or that it was, and actually it is none of those things. And I think that, you know, knowing that, I think the church is beginning, I don't know, things are definitely changing, but also kind of recognizing that, you know, just because we're Christians, it doesn't mean we don't struggle with any of these other things. And so when I kind of find, and I don't know if I very naively before kind of thought, well, hang on a minute, why am I struggling with this? Surely I'm in this kind of group of people. I you know, life should be really fun and really good. And God was like, well, hang on a minute, I remember what I said. And I, you know, I mean that in a kind of, you know, slightly jovial sense, but you know, we are not immune. And so there shouldn't be any surprise there for any Christians who are struggling. And but yeah, I mean, my faith has definitely had a very central place in my recovery and since. Yeah.
I think I have another question, and I think it aligns very much with what you've just been saying about, like, you know, well, if I sort of practice my faith and, you know, I pray, I was gonna say I pray religiously, like, you know, I engage in prayer and do all the things that I'm supposed to do, then, you know, I should be fine. And I guess I've got like two thoughts about that, in terms of one side of things, you know, maybe outsiders or, you know, family members or something, do you think that there could be an element of, well, clearly you're not, you know, you're not being, I don't know what the right word is, you're not practicing your faith enough, like clearly you're doing something wrong, and that's why God has, you know, forces eating disorder upon you or whatever. So very much saying that it's sort of like something that God is causing for somebody, but then in the same respect, I think something that I've seen before that I think can be quite difficult is for people to rely wholeheartedly on faith and religion, and not just to Christianity, to many religions,
yeah,
on recovery. So, you know, if mm-hmm. if I'm a good Christian, then I will recover, and, you know, God will find the way for me. And I think the way that I see it from what you've been saying is that it's not that, you know, God has forced this upon you because you're a bad Christian, or it's not that God will magically make you better because you're a good Christian. It's that bad things happen and God is there to support you through those bad things and to, you know, hopefully hold a beacon of hope out for you. But also, the aspect of faith can help you to come through recovery and have something to hold on to, but it can't be relied on. You know, you still have to do, you personally have to do the work of recovery. You can't just pray to God that you're going to recover from your eating disorder and then, I guess, you know, miraculously be cured. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that to like minimize people's beliefs or whatever. I think it's just a really important thing to talk about, because I've heard it quite a lot of, you know, maybe not the people suffering from an eating disorder, but maybe their loved ones, to say, mm-hmm. you know, it's okay, like God's got your back. And yes, God has got your back, but the work still needs to happen in you.
You are absolutely right on both those counts. So A, God does not cause eating disorders on us. He doesn't force them upon us. He doesn't make them happen. They happen for all the reasons that you and I understand eating disorders to happen. Yeah, absolutely. The role of faith, he is in the mess with us. He is he is kind, he is loving, he is faithful, he is compassionate, he is gracious and merciful and all those things. And in the same way that kind of our salvation isn't earned by us doing good things and us doing the right things and you know, praying whatever, doing whatever, you know, we are, if you, you know, if you're a Christian and you believe it, you know, we are saved because of Jesus, not because of anything we have done. It's purely out of grace and mercy. We cannot earn our salvation and our redemption. It's all God's kindness and love. And he doesn't make us have eating disorders. You are also right in that you know, believing that, you know, if we pray every day, if we read our Bibles every day, if we go to church every Sunday or every, you know, however often you want to go to church, that alone is going to facilitate or enable or effect a miraculous healing. Absolutely, we need to do the emotional work. We need to do the, you know, God works through science. God works through, you know, God heals people through medics, through doctors, with physical illness. And it's absolutely the same with mental illness. God will use therapists and nutritionists and, you know, all sorts of professionals, you know, to work alongside us to aid us in our recovery. So it's not, you know, God at the exclusion of every other professional. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I do know of one person who was miraculously healed of bulimia that she'd had for years. And literally one day to the next, gone. That's one. So
wow.
In the same way that, you know, you do sometimes hear of miraculous, you know, physical healing, and, you know, someone goes for a scan and the tumor that was there 2 weeks ago is gone. It's rare, but it does happen. And so I think we very much hold that in mind. You know, it is by and large a combination of, in terms of eating disorders, psychotherapists, psychologists, you know, dietitians, nutritionists, you know, the whole, you know, array of professional specialist help with a really good support network of, you know, friends, family, that we can send a quick SOS message, go, I'm in a real pickle, please, you know, help, SOS. And I remember when I was getting better, you know, I don't think we had mobile phones in those days. That's how old I am. But I would, what would I do? Pick up a phone. Well, I can't remember what I did. But literally just, you know, SOS. And I didn't have to explain, and I didn't have to, and they just knew that, okay, you know, it's a really tough moment. And so, you know, professional help, really good support network. And in my case, and hopefully for others, God, faith, mm-hmm. Whatever that is. And all three, and I say this when I, you know, in my talks, that all three were really important. It, for me, mm-hmm. it was like a three-stranded, you know, recovery path. And all really important, all really valuable. And I think without any one of them, I wouldn't be here in the way that I am. And I think it makes me really cross when I hear, or and sad when I hear that. But I was this person too, where, you know, I'm not praying enough, or I'm not believing enough, or it's my fault because I'm doing something wrong, or and I think, no, that's not, you know, that's not how Christianity works. That's not how our, you know, relationship with God works. It's not, you know, he's not there beating us with a, you haven't gone to church this week. I haven't been to church for a couple of weeks for various reasons. I don't think he's there, you know, waiting to trip me up on a technicality. That's not the God I know. That's not the God I believe in. You know.
But that to me sounds very much like the eating disorder coming through, because the eating disorder, for me, whatever I engaged in, told me that I wasn't enough. And so that it just sounds like the eating disorder feeding through into your faith, your religion, of, you know, this is happening to you because you're not praying enough, because you don't believe in God enough, and things like that. So actually, that's, yeah, I feel like that's a really key element there, and that,
yeah,
that's,
oh my
the
God,
eating disorder, yeah, getting in the way.
The eating disorder will get in the way of, you know, anything that we try and do to get away from it. It'll use whatever it can to trip us up, to distort our thinking, to it lies and deceit. I mean, it's the biggest liar I know. It tells us that, you know, that's the route and path to happiness and, you know, eternal joy. And it's not, it's a dead end road to misery, as we know. But it's a very clever, convincing, you know, liar, isn't it? And and it's very subtle, and it and it somehow, the eating sort of knows what it is in each one of us that is going to really get us. And, you know, if for the Christian it's you're just not praying enough, or you said something really unkind about that person. Well, you're not meant to be unkind, are you? You're meant to be really kind and gentle and loving, and you were really nasty. And it'll be whatever it is. And and I think that really has the potential to, sadly, you know, hold people back. But I think, you know, separating the two is really important, and ultimately holding on to that, you know, God is above all merciful and compassionate and gentle, and I think when I reflected on that more and more, it became a bit lighter, I think. Can't make sense.
Yeah, I think it's kind of across the board, isn't it, with an eating disorder, that anything that's important to you, or that you kind of, that is a part of you, it will make you feel like you're crap at it. Whether, you know, whether that is your religion, or whether that's being a friend or a partner or whatever, it's the nature of the beast. So I think if it is, you know, the whole, you know, this is happening to you because you're not, you know, doing enough as part of your Christianity, then that's probably a very clear sign that your eating disorder is making that up. I guess one thing that I wanted to do, just to kind of end the podcast, is we are recording this now because of Lent coming up, and obviously Lent is kind of that period of time where, I think if you put it in very basic words, I'm sure you'll be able to say this much more beautifully than I can, because I'm sure it is something that you engage in, but in my eyes, it's, you know, you give up something for a period of time. And in my experience as somebody that isn't religious, a lot of people use that as, I'm going to give up chocolate, I'm going to give up crisps, I'm going to give up all these bad foods. And I think actually it can be a time to, oh my God, I've just had a great idea. Lent, give up your eating disorder.
Yeah.
There we go. just do it for a short period of time to see how it feels. Yeah, what a big absolute F you to your eating disorder. No, I'm not dieting this year, mate.
I love it.
Sorry, slight tangent there. But yeah, I think it can be a time also to give up negative things in your life. So what has your experience of Lent been? What kind of things does it mean to you?
So I think you know, you've hit me on the spot. I think Lent, you know, was born out of, you know, Jesus' 40 days in the desert, and several denominations took that on. And so for, you know, Christians, and to kind of to spend those 40 days, and the Bible talks about fasting, and it's you know, and that's all fine. But fasting is almost always in the Bible tied in with prayer. Fast and pray. Mm. That's the combination of words that you will often see in the Bible. I think over the years, it's sort of been slightly, I don't want to say corrupted, but people have adopted it as a way of bingo, you know, losing weight or feeding the eating disorder, and using it kind of as a cloak to hide under. Mm-hmm. And it's Lent. I'm going to give up X, Y, and Z, you know, sweets, chocolate, pastries, you know, whatever it is, crisps, nuts, you know, whatever. I did it too for many years. But actually, you know, if we go back to what we were talking about before, about recovery and about being really honest with ourselves, and, you know, why are we walking to work? Do we really want to save the planet, or is it just to get the extra steps in? You know, it's those sorts of questions in that kind of, you know, quasi recovery, or even earlier, when we just twist something round that is very legitimate. Sure, you know, stop using public transport. You know, save the planet. You know, everyone talks about, you know, fresh air, mental well being. Except for with the person with the eating disorder, where that can, you know, just, you know, make things worse, and it can fuel the eating disorder. And so I think Lent has become a very easy way for people to take something that is, you know, good and legitimate, and use it to kind of serve their own unhelpful and kind of destructive, you know, purposes. And personally, I, you know, there are so many alternatives that we can, you know, do during Lent that are not unhelpful, that are not going to take us, you know, further into the eating disorder, but actually, you know, further away. And it's, you know, you don't have to give something up. You know, we can take something up. We can start something new. Mm. We can, put 20p, 50p, a pound, you know, however, you know, in a jar every day. And at the end of Lent, you know, donate it to your favorite charity or to a person that you might know is really, really, really struggling financially. You can help someone with chores. You can send a card to a friend every day during Lent. I mean, probably not the same friend every day for 40 days, you know, but different people. But, you know, or do something nice for someone else. You know, there was a research study that conductors did research, and they found that if you do something nice for someone else 5 days of the week, people reported a 41% increase in feelings of well-being.
Wow.
And I just think that is amazing. And it still gives you 2 days off where you don't have to do anything nice for anyone except for yourself.
You know. Just don't be a super horrible person on those 2 days.
Well, yeah. You know, just one small thing for someone else for 5 days, and, you know, it just, I found that quite staggering and really rather lovely. You know, we can take up a new skill, a new hobby, a new discipline, a new. I love my mother-in-law, who I totally adore. I hit the jackpot with my mother-in-law, and I know mother-in-laws get a bad rap, but mine is utterly gorgeous. I remember her years ago saying to me, because I think someone in the extended family said something about Lent, and she said, oh, what a load of nonsense. She goes, I always, and I think she heard it from someone else, which is starve the sin, not the bin. And I've just, I've remembered that. And every Lent, that comes into my mind, starve the sin, not the bin. Exactly. So, I mean, yes, we can do things, nice things for other people. We can, you know, but actually we can look at our own self and, you know, decide and determine that, you know, I mean, we should be doing it all the time. But for Lent, you know, making an extra big effort to, okay, what are some of my really not very nice habits, perhaps? Or there's something in me that, you know, I could try being more patient. I could try, you know, I don't know, that person that you find really difficult at work or at school or in college, are you really gossipy? Do you have a tendency to, I don't know. But I think, gosh, that, you know, every Lent, and I hear my mother-in-law's words in my head and I think, okay, what do I need to work on, you know, this Lent? What am I going to try and do better and or be nicer at, or, you know? And I think that's going to be much more impactful long-term, because, you know, it's generally a better thing. And it's also, it's outward looking, as a lot of these other suggestions that I've given are, you know, helping someone else, sending a card, you know, it's outward. And I think, you know, particularly in the context of eating disorders, which are so inward looking, they're so kind of, you know, kind of navel gazing, really bad kind of in this context. but, you know, and I just think if we can spend a bit more time, depending on, you know, where we're at on our journeys, of just looking outwards a bit more and looking to those around us. And I think even in small ways, I think the world is such a difficult place at the moment that even the smallest acts of kindness or the smallest gestures that can help someone, that can put a smile on their face, that can ease someone else's load, have a sort of a bigger impact because of how difficult things are. And so, those are kind of my tips for Lent. And I think with eating disorder recovery, I think just being really honest about our motives for doing what we're doing. And you know, I know some people who give up social media for 40 days, that's a really good one to do, unless of course it's, you know, part of our work, in which case it's a bit hard. But
as a social media manager, I think I'd struggle quite a lot. But you give up your personal social media.
Exactly. I think that's probably more for people for whom social media isn't there, you know.
Yeah, literally.
How they earn their living.
I just got a strike at work for 40 days. 40 Guys, days. I'm giving up social media for Lent, so I'm just not gonna work.
That's not for us, but you know, but for others who are listening who do just use it for personal use and for social use, you know, that's a really good and really challenging one. I don't know, there are so many, but
I think kind of the conclusion absolutely is to, you know, the whole point of it is meant to be that it has positive influence. So whether, you know, for some people that could be giving up something that they have an unhealthy relationship with, but I think that, you know, as long as it's promoting positive change for you and those around you, like, then I think it's a brilliant thing. And like you said, there's so many things that you can do. And I really like that idea of bringing something new into your life, you know, or maybe changing a habit or a behavior that you've got that, you know, isn't serving you positively. I think you've given some great ideas.
Volunteering at, you know, food banks or shelters or children's groups or you know, the lonely neighbor. There are loads of things we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Carolina, it's been such a lovely conversation with you. And I'm really, really glad that we've reconnected. Where can people go to find out more about you and the work that you do?
They can find me on my website, which is carolinamountford.com. And then on socials, Carolina Mountford MH on Instagram, and Carolina Mountfo, because Twitter doesn't let me use my full name, so it stops at O. And then my normal name, Carolina Mountford, on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for kind of sharing all your experiences and being so insightful. I think it's really nice to hear other people's perspectives.
It's been lovely to chat. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.